Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 313 in the series. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
And we have Mike Estella here.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Our producer. And Lisa has her parents in the studio, Alice and Bob Matanky. It's so nice to have them here. And we don't mess up, Lisa.
I wouldn't.
Don't mess up. Your
and
parents are here.
And we have Dan Long here filling in for Shantae, so we know we're going to have a smooth show.
We always used to say the greatest producer, we had him first, and then he went on to bigger and better things. He just, you know, he went on to produce all the big shows here, and we still get him every once in a while.
Luckily, we have our own great producer.
Oh, so. I know we do. We have Shantae Garth, and we have Mike Estella.
Why would WGN hire?
Who's the greatest?
I was going to say, why
Dan
would they
Long.
Hire anybody
Long
who's not great around here?
Dan Long is the greatest.
This weekend, you're the greatest.
That's right. We have classic radio shows all the way to 1 a.m. tonight. We're going to start things off with a very good Western. It's called Luke Slaughter of Tombstone from 1958. Then after that, it's I Was a Communist for the FBI, starring Dana Andrews from 1953. We're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote, and we're also going to talk with Dave Weiske. He is the Vice President of Customer Success at Cat's Pride and Oil Dry, and he's coming on, and he's going to give away, Lisa,
an entire year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
Yes, he is.
All right, so it's a big day
so
here.
So it is a big day. Let's start things off with Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Before Sunrise. Did you see that, Carl?
I have not.
Great movie with Ethan Hawke.
I know one thing. You don't get up before sunrise, that's for sure.
That's
I'll call
true.
Her at 9, 10 o'clock in the morning.
But you don't hear that snoring, though.
I know you're doing it, though, because you do it at the station a lot.
Oh, yeah.
She falls asleep while these classic radio shows on.
Yeah, usually just slump over in my chair.
You need to clip that uvula. Clip that uvula, and you won't have that problem anymore.
I'm going to head over to the doctor tomorrow morning.
All right, so
it's Before Sunrise, 1995 movie, and the prize is two tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical, which opens September 13th.
It's a belly dance.
At the Royal George Theater, and I promise it's not a belly dance.
All right, call us, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200.
Caller 5.
She wants the fifth caller. Call now. Play the game with us live on the air. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have a sister, Lisa, on the phone from Rolling Meadows. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, my gosh.
Fabulous.
My worst nightmare. Two Lisas.
Double the fun here.
Oh, my gosh.
Nothing better. Nothing better.
I agree. So, congratulations. You're caller 5. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote. The movie is Before Sunrise. Roger, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okie dokie. Number one. Roger usually gets it wrong.
He scared me. It came out of nowhere.
This is a fabulous movie. Nobody gets it wrong.
I agree. Roger, have
Lisa,
you seen it?
Is this a romantic movie?
It's a romantic movie. You'd hate it.
I was asking Lisa on the phone.
Oh, I thought you meant me.
No,
this is confusing.
It's not completely romantic.
Oh,
it's,
no?
You should see Before Sunrise
and then
Before Sunset.
I just mentioned that's the sequel.
Well, she's going to know it then. Lisa, it sounds like she knows what
she's
talking about.
Don't listen to Roger.
No, not necessarily.
I haven't said anything. What do you mean?
Whatever you do, Roger doesn't know.
I don't know.
Here we go. Number one. Just trying to stop the tears from falling. Number two, pain has forced me to trust less. Number three, it fascinates me how a single place can join so much pain and happiness. What do you think,
Lisa?
Wow. It's
right?
Making me doubt everything now.
I'm so sorry. What do you think?
I think it's three.
Number three, it fascinates me how a single place can join so much pain and happiness. Roger.
You know, number one really like sounds like very simple stated.
Well, Roger's never
just
right.
Just trying
so.
To stop the tears
Roger
from falling.
Never gets it right, I so know. I'm not going with Roger. I'm sticking with Lisa.
Number three?
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
It fascinates me how a single place can join so much pain and happiness.
Lisa.
Yeah, I like number one better.
You got it right. Congratulations. I warned you, Roger's not right. One out of three, maybe. But Lisa.
I still love Roger. I love Roger, too.
Lisa, you're the winner here. You won two tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical. It opens September.
It's a belly dance.
Yeah, it's definitely not. September 13th at the Royal George Theater. The Royal George Theater is fantastic. It's on Halsted Street, and it's got a lot of friendship, food, fun, great conversation. You'll love it. Check it out at WasteWatchersTheMusical.com or call the Royal George box office 312-988-9000. Congratulations. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
All right, let's welcome Dave Wieske to the phone lines. He is not here live in the studio because he's somewhere else. Dave, where are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm right across the river, unfortunately, with a little bit of a conflict. Hello, Catch Pride Nation.
All right.
And
as long as you're not on a van, in a van down by the river.
No, I'm not in a van down by the river. But hi, Carl. Hi, Lisa.
How are you,
hi, Mike,
Dave?
Shante. And
hey.
Most importantly, you left me out of meeting Lisa's parents, Alice and Bob. Alice and Bob.
Well, you know what?
Next year you'll have another chance.
Yeah.
They would love me as usual.
I told them. That's
you're
exactly
a lovable
what I told
guy.
Them.
That's why. So Dave is the Vice President of Customer Success at Cat's Pride. Dave, tell our listeners a little bit about the Cat's Pride program that you're running right now and how they can sign up and help cats all over the world.
Sure. And our program that we're running right now is called Litter for Good. And Dan and I have been on the show this past 6-7 months pumping the Litter for Good program. And our quarterback is Leah Kraft, who has been outstanding at working this program and really donating really pounds of litter to the local shelters, and basically we just achieved 2.1 million pounds to date. And this is how it works. Basically, go out to catspride.com, click on the Litter for Good link, and join the Cats Pride Club. Then basically you'll nominate your local shelter to receive free litter. And again, the more nominations your shelter receives, the more litter that's eligible to them for claims. So it's really simple. Just buy a jug of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light, any of our Cat's Pride Fresh and Light offering, and every time you do so, a pound of litter is added to the total amount donated. And basically, we don't ship a pound of litter out to these shelters. Basically, it's accumulation of pounds for the respective shelters. So basically, we get up to certain shelters that are very high in nominations that they might get a full truckload, almost 40,000 pounds because of all the nominations. So again, it's very simple. Go out to catspride.com and hit the Litter for Good link and see the videos and see Dan and Catherine Heigl pounding across the country, donating litter all over the place. It's pretty awesome, and we're real proud of what we're doing for the community. And most importantly, we're not doing this for really ourselves. This is how we can get the word out, more chances really to save more cats. And that's what is critical. And I just want to quick cover a couple of reviews that I got today. And this one is great because it mentions the program. And I'm going to Cats Pride Ultimate Care. This is our hypoallergenic. It says, my older cat started urinating more, so I switched from this pebble litter that I had to the scoopable litter by Cat's Pride. It's definitely much better. Clumps, so nothing is missed. I choose this brand because they donate 1 pound to every jug to shelters. And that's pretty much pretty cool as it relates to the relationship to Litter for Good. So we're really excited. We're seeing that come in on several reviews that people are excited about helping the cause. And again, seeing very positive reviews to complement that particular effort.
Dave, we are so proud here at WGN Radio Theater to be working with you, obviously, since the inception of this show, and so proud to be working with Cat's Pride. Can you just tell us really briefly why it is so extraordinarily important for the litter to be delivered to all of these shelters? Why is that so important?
Well, you know, if you know a little bit about these shelters, there's a lot of cats that are euthanized over the course of any given week, every given month, every given year. And it's really sad that, again, the funds to keep them in a healthy state to basically get them to a point where they can be adopted is very, very important. So we're helping really those shelters, you know, defer the dollars they spend on litter and put it towards the health of their animals, and again, trying to promote adoption locally. So we're seeing a lot of traction on that front. And if we talk about a number, I'm going to throw out a number that's pretty scary. It is like 2.5 million cats are euthanized every year, sadly.
Wow. Yeah. So what you're doing is keeping cats alive because they don't have to spend money on litter, and they can keep the cats alive and keeping them healthy. So we want to thank you for that, and Cats Pride and Dan Jaffe and the whole gang, which is a Chicago-based company right here, right down the street from us here at WGN, in fact, and hundreds of employees and a great, great company. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. They do this every single month. Dan and Dave come in here, and we pick at random a name from someone who has sent in a picture of their kitty cat. And we had to do this ahead of time because Dave was not coming in. So, Dave, what is the winner's name and the cat's name?
Well, the beauty of it is technology. I had the random selection. It's April Capizzoli from Belmar, New Jersey. How about that for a reach with WGN?
Wow.
Her cats are Princey, Finnick, and Ava. Again, April Capizzoli from Belmar, New Jersey. Congrats, April. She probably was shopping at Wakefern Foods. That's usually one of the big players we have out in New Jersey. So just to talk about where you can purchase Cat's Pride, let me hit a couple of places in the brick-and-mortar sector. Walmart, Meijer, Jewel here, local in the Chicagoland area. We reach as far as Florida with this beautiful 50,000-watt station. Publix down there. And, again, if you don't want to go to the store, always Walmart.com, Chewy.com, Amazon.com, which is continuing to be the point of choice because folks just don't want to haul litter when they go to the store. So really exciting. Congrats on another show, Lisa and Carl. This is outstanding. And I really wish Bob and Alice to have a great time while they're in Chicago.
Oh, man. Thank you, Dave. You know what? Cat's Pride is our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. They bring you all these classic radio shows. Support them to pick up a Cat's Pride in the green jug because that's this program, Litter for Good.
Right, the fresh and
yeah,
light ultimate
care. Yeah, don't forget the Litter for Good. That's yep. very, right. very important.
Please very
reach
good.
Out to catspride.com and join Litter for Good.
Thank you,
Dave.
We look
appreciate
forward to seeing
it, buddy.
You next month.
See you next month. All right, it is time now for Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. We are going to tune this in. But first, Lisa, you wanted to mention something, right? No? You don't want to mention it right now? All right, let's tune in to Luke Slaughter of Tombstone from May 11th, 1958. Sam Buffington stars. Let's go back. Part one now of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Slaughter's my name, Luke Slaughter. Cattle's my business. It's a tough business. It's big business. I've got a big stake in it. And there's no man west of the Rio Grande big enough to take it from me.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. Across the territory from Yuma to Fort Defiance, from Flagstaff to the Huachucas, and below the border through Chihuahua and Sonora, his name was respected. Or feared, depending on which side of the law you were on. Man of vision, man of legend, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
When Tombstone became the seat of the newly formed Cochise County in 1881, the old town marshal became the new county sheriff. And he discovered that it's hard sometimes for a man to assume added responsibilities.
Hey, Luke, here comes the sheriff. He's sure scallywhooting.
Well, what kind of trouble you got yourself in now, Wichita?
Why, I ain't in no...
I'd have your advice, Luke.
Howdy there, Sheriff. Can't it wait till we say good morning?
No. Well, yeah, I guess it can. Good morning.
Morning, Sheriff.
Now, Luke, they're holding four renegade Apaches over at St. David. Burned a farm, murdered a man and a woman.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but the posse ran them down all right.
Well, that posse better string them engines up just to...
Yeah, that's why I came out here. Instead of letting the posse let justice take its course, the law says I got to haul the four of them into Tombstone to stand trial.
That is justice, Sheriff. If the Apaches can be identified in court, they'll hang legally.
Yeah, they got identification. Them four Redskins was born bad.
I don't think anybody's born bad, Sheriff.
Well, I haven't time to debate the point. What I want to know is, how am I going to get the four of them into Tombstone?
Well,
it's a full day's ride each way. I got one regular deputy, Clint Wallace. One of us has got to be in Tombstone, and the other'd be dead if he tried herding them four killers here by himself.
Well, why?
Why don't you shackle him and bring him in by stage?
The stage line through St. David went broke, you know that.
Yes, and there's a Concord wagon gathering dust over there, and there's six stage horses eating county oats till they're sold at auction.
Hey, there isn't that. Only it's too dangerous for one man.
All right, Sheriff. Deputize me for a couple of days, and I'll go with you.
Now, if you need
I was hoping you'd volunteer, Luke. We leave early tomorrow morning. Say, can you handle a six-horse hitch?
Well, I never drove a six-horse hitch, but there's a couple of men in Tombstone you could get.
Can I get just one measly word in edgewise?
Why, sure. Just say it.
Well, I drove stage for Birch and Holiday and Butterfield. And if I can't drive four ratty Apaches from St. David to Tombstone, Hank Monkey South couldn't do it. Get on there! Pull on there!
Wichita, we know you're a top whip. These horses still can't go 50 miles at a full gallop.
He's down a little. These bumps are like to shake the shackles off the prisoners.
Pull those horses way down. It's time our prisoners had a drink of water.
You're right, Luke. Awful hot and dusty out here.
Hey, Wichita, you're having the time of your life, ain't you?
Well, now...
Yeah, so would I. These murdering Apaches didn't have me spooked.
I don't like any part of it. I'll be glad when the day's over.
Yeah. Yeah, they're mean customers, all right. They know it's their last ride, less than they bust loose from us.
I'll pass them the water bag. You men keep me covered, just in case.
Yeah, we will, Luke.
Here you are, Niskanen. Water.
I'll drink. Chains tight.
Your hands are loose enough to hold it. Hurry up. That's better. Pass it when you're through.
A little whiffy up there, close to him, ain't it?
Like a wolf's den.
Hey, Luke, down there in the wash, those two men.
Yeah, I see them.
Ain't one of them Al Larson?
It is, Al, at that. Hey there, Larson!
Yeah, I don't recognize a fella coming toward us.
Luke, did you see that?
I sure did. Al emptied his iron right into him.
Why did he do it? The other hombre never made no move to draw.
Wichita, keep an eye on the prisoners.
Right.
Come on, Sheriff. Looks like we've got to take another passenger to Tombstone.
That's the first portion of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, a show called Heritage, starring Sam Buffington. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I saw a very, very cool painting that you bought, Lisa.
I sure did,
Carl. Did you call me and check with me? Because I am an art major, you know.
Oh, I know. You're excellent at art.
You know, but I saw it on the Facebook page already.
I'm about to post it. That's a snazzy painting you bought today.
I know. Today.
So I'm about to post it. I just wanted to share with everybody. I went to the Port Clinton Art Fair, which is in Highland Park, and it's a very high-quality art fair in my neighborhood. And I met an artist there who I thought was spectacular. His name is Carl M. Crawford.
Well, his name's Carl, so.
He's he's a fellow Carl. He must be fantastic.
Of course he's great.
He is what he calls a collage illusionist. So it's really special, very unique. Nobody else has
he's pieces. A CI.
He's a collage illusionist. He's a CI. He's from South Carolina. He came to Highland Park to do this art fair. And what he does is creates by hand. He cuts shaded color slivers from magazines and he glues them to glass and he composes an image that way. And he uses only donated magazines. So this collage illusion is recycling at its finest. It is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
And he uses a high quality printing process called G-Clay. And I bought two pieces from him from the Movement collection. One is called Ballerina and one is called Grace. I'm going to post them on the Facebook page right now. Check it out. He is.
You did good, Lisa.
Thank you. He's really special, nice. And I wanted to share that
going
with everyone.
In my room at your home?
Well, they're for sale.
You said I could rent a room for you.
I didn't say that, but everything's for sale. But this is really special, so I'm going to keep it out to myself.
It is really, really cool.
Thank you. Check it out on the Facebook page.
So can people go and buy more things from this
CI? They can. You know what? Yes, thank you. I'm going to give out his website. It's Carl with a C, Carl M. Crawford, CRAWFORD.com. Check it out and go to our Facebook page and you can see a picture of me standing with him and I'll show you exactly what
I bought. Did you already hang it up on the wall and everything?
Sure did.
Wow, very cool. Nice
thanks,
job. Great stuff.
Thanks,
all right, we're listening
excited.
To Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. This was an adult Western, and I didn't have a chance to talk about it in the before we started playing it. And Sam Buffington, a deep voice radio actor, he played Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman, and he was a hard-boiled cowboy facing murderers, swindlers, cheaters, and robbers in the old west of the 1800s. It was created by William N. Robeson, who also produced Suspense, Escape, and Fort Laramie. So we're listening to a good episode. Let's go back to May 11th, 1958. It's called Heritage. Here's the conclusion to Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Al, you must have had a reason. You've lived in these parts better than 10 years. I don't think you've ever had an argument before that I heard about.
I can't talk about it, Mr. Slaughter. I shot him, you saw that, and that's it.
You'll have to stand trial, you know.
Just take me before a judge and I plead guilty. I don't want to put anyone to any trouble.
You're putting us to a powerful lot of trouble. Wichita and two horses had to take the body back to St. David, and I gotta drive this rig myself.
Come on, Al. Who was he?
Don't know what he called himself. Nobody in St. David will identify him either.
I've seen that face somewhere, I'm sure.
No, there wouldn't be a chance in a million of that. I'm willing to take my medicine, so forget it.
We want to do you a favor, don't you see? Give us a reason you shot him. Maybe we can get you off.
I would like one favor.
We'll try, Al.
When we get to my place, let me go in and say goodbye to my youngster.
Well,
I think we could do what Al's asking, Sheriff. We've both known him for a long time.
If you say so, Luke.
Al, little Barbara's gonna find out you killed that man. There's no way out of it.
Well, I was thinking if I plead guilty without a trial or anything, then you could keep it out of the newspaper.
I don't think we can. But just suppose we did. Somebody's gotta take care of Barbie. She's not 13 yet, is she?
Well, almost. And Barbie knows what she's to do if anything ever happens to me.
Al, you didn't figure all the consequences of shooting that man down, did you?
I figured the consequences of not doing it. But my farm's just ahead now. Can I go say goodbye to Barbie?
As far as I'm concerned. Sheriff?
All right, Larson. I'll unlock your wrist chain and give you 5 minutes.
Oh, all that. I wonder how Wichita drives 6 horses.
I wish he'd hurry up.
Sheriff, he hasn't been in there much more than a minute. Oh, this whole mess makes me almost sick.
I know, Luke. Me too.
The face of the man he killed. I can only remember where I've seen it.
Why we stop, wide-eyed?
Never mind. Just be quiet down there.
We got to make Tombstone before dark. Can't trust an Apache any further than you can throw.
Sheriff, they're chained.
Who's that?
It's Al. Al! Come back here!
All right, Slaughter. Letting him say goodbye to his kid was your idea.
I can't believe I could be so wrong about him. I can't believe anything that's happening today.
Now, what do we do?
Get the Apaches to Tombstone as fast as we can, organize a posse, and go after Al.
Well, where are you going now?
To have a quick talk with Larson's daughter. Just watch these prisoners.
He didn't say where he was going, Mr. Slaughter, just that he'd be back.
Just that?
Well, exactly what he said was that he'd be back for me.
Barbie, this is rough country. Sometimes things we can't know about just sort of happen. What if your father was delayed? Say he didn't get back for quite a long time.
Well, I know it won't, but... Well, if anything does happen to him, I'm supposed to go into St. David. We're Mormons, you see, and if there's trouble, we take care of each other.
I know. You're not worried about the Indians?
Oh, no. They come here for food if they need it, and, well, of course, we always share what we happen to have.
If more people acted that way, there'd be less trouble with the Indians. Barbie, you're getting to be a fine-looking young lady. You favor your mother, do you?
Father says not too much.
No, kiddie, move on.
We have a long trip, Barbara, so when your father comes back, tell him... Well, tell him I'm sorry whenever I miss a friend.
I guess we'll make it before dark. About 10 miles yet.
It'd be a cinch if it weren't for this hill. Whoa! Hold up. With this loaded, it'd finish the horses. We'll have to take the leg irons off the Apaches and all walk up.
Yeah, I reckon you're right, Luke.
Early. All right, Niskanen. You and your friends can stretch. Out with you.
Hold your bag out.
Want water.
You'll get it. Sheriff, you got the keys?
Of course I have. It's just your legs, you filthy...
Don't waste time calling them names.
Don't you waste time. Give them the water.
As soon as you get clear to keep a gun on them.
I got a gun on them. Only takes one hand to unlock the shackles.
Here, Niskanen.
Lawman's gun. I trample White Eye Slaughter.
Niskanen, you'll never...
Gorla, take these. Make hands free. Lawman die fast from own gun. Slaughter die slow from Niskanen's knife.
An Apache foot on my throat. Apache knees pinning my arms and legs. Niskanen leering over me as he grabbed my hair. And then, from a rock cover somewhere on that hill...
Mr. Slaughter?
Yeah. Yeah, Al, I'm all right.
Well, the sheriff's done for. So are the Apaches.
Where'd you come from, Al? I figured you and Barbie'd be across the border by now.
Well, I went back as soon as I thought it out. We'd be running the rest of our lives, and someday I'd have to tell her why we were running. So I was riding after you to give myself up.
Things are going to turn out all right for you and your youngster. What you just did will make a big difference with the jury. You just tell them why you shot that man this morning and...
There isn't going to be a jury. Doesn't have to be. I'm guilty. I killed a man. But nobody's ever going to know why I killed him.
Al Larson and I brought 5 bodies into Tombstone. There wasn't any trouble about the dead Apaches. There had been witnesses to their other murders, and Al and I had seen them kill the sheriff. Deputy Clint Wallace was sworn in as the new sheriff, and Al was quietly locked up. Wichita and I were the only ones left who'd watched him gun a man down in the desert.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Slaughter. Come on in.
Morning, Sheriff.
Why don't you just call me Clint like you used to?
Sure thing. And you start calling me Luke. How's Al Larson?
Just the same. Quiet. No trouble. You want to talk to him?
Wichita's back. We'll talk to Al when he gets here.
Good. I hope you don't think I administer the law as sloppy as the place looks. I'm cleaning out the old sheriff's belongings.
Junk is a better word for it.
I liked him. He was a good lawman when the job wasn't so big. But he sure was a pack rat. Look at these. Handbills from 10, 15 years ago.
Wanted for mine fraud. Colorado, 1868. Wanted for murders. Sacramento, 1871.
You must have saved him from long before he even came to Tombstone.
Well, here I be. Here's this son of a gun stew and biscuits I cooked up for Al. Oh, howdy, Clint.
Howdy, Wichita.
Clint, you mind if I take these old handbills?
Well, of course not. I don't see why you'd want them, but
well, I have a collection of them myself.
Oh, you're a pack rat, too.
Huh? Oh, no. Luke calls himself an amateur historian or something.
Oh, well, I'll get Al. You'd rather talk out here, I imagine.
Please.
Well, here, take the grub along. I know you aim to run a good jail, but you're too young to know how to cook.
I'm too busy. Haven't had too many complaints about the wife's cooking, though.
Women can't cook neither. Talk Al into taking a jury trial?
I haven't talked to him at all yet. Wichita.
Yes?
Weren't you out in California around Sacramento some years ago?
Yeah. Let's see. August of 1870 to February of 72. Couldn't stand it no longer. Why?
That's just the time I'm interested in. You recall a bad shooting in a hotel out there around 1871?
Well, sure I do. Gaylord Massacre, they called it. It was a dangerous thing.
Tell me about it later, Wichita.
Oh, well, howdy there, Al.
Howdy, Wichita. Morning, Mr. Slaughter.
Morning, and please make it Luke. Al, Wichita rode to St. David again yesterday. Got back just a few hours ago.
How's Barbara? You see her?
Well, of course I seen her. She's sure a top little filly, Al.
Thanks. Elder Norton and Mrs. Norton taking good care of her?
Oh, she's in real good hands. See, I brung you some biscuits.
I told him, Wichita.
Oh.
Al, Wichita says that the man you were... Well, he was never identified.
No one in St. David could have known him.
There weren't any papers on him. His horse was a stolen horse. He's been buried.
God rest his soul.
Who was he, Al?
I haven't any idea what he called himself.
Why won't you let us help you?
Luke, I killed a man. The law says it's wrong. Law can have me.
You killed four more men, saving my life. The law doesn't say that's wrong. Al, the circuit judge, will be in Tombstone day after tomorrow. Still rather go before a stranger than the local judge.
Yep, that's what I want.
Feller and bear cubs, man. Everybody in town knows you. Why don't you take a jury trial? Luke and me will testify the other hombre drew on you and you'll go scot-free.
Wichita, nobody's going to lie for me. Now, Luke, I mean that. You're not going to do it.
No, we aren't. Clint?
Yeah, Luke?
When the judge gets in, tell him this prisoner waives his right to a jury trial and counsel. And it'll be your responsibility to see that no one else attends his trial.
Albert Larson, you are charged with shooting to death an unidentified man in this county of Cochise on May 11th, 1882. How do you plead?
Guilty, Your Honor.
Sheriff Wallace, the brief you've prepared might not be a model for a law class, but it's a fine example of getting to the meat of a case. The two gentlemen who have been sworn are your only witnesses?
Yes, sir.
You may proceed.
Well, Mr. Slaughter, you and Wichita, Mr. Bagby, watched Mr. Larson fire six shots at the deceased stranger?
We did.
Well, how far away were you?
Oh, I should say about 40 rods.
You recognized Mr. Larson, but not the other man, huh?
That's right.
Did you recognize him when you reached the body?
I thought perhaps I'd seen the face before, but it wasn't until yesterday I was sure of it.
Luke, you didn't know him.
The defendant will remain quiet, please.
Then I found this old handbill issued by the California State Marshal in 1871. I will swear that the face drawn here is the face of the man Mr. Larson shot.
Yeah, I'll swear, too. It's either him or that artist fella was a mighty lucky guesser.
Wanted for murder. Arson, armed stagecoach robbery. Parley Ring. Well, I was in California myself when young Ring was terrorizing the whole state.
So was I, Your Honor. Everybody figured Ring got wounded so bad in that bloody Sacramento mess that he must have died. But the man on that handbill's the man Larson shot.
I never knew him as Parley Ring.
Mr. Larson, you'll have a chance to testify later if you wish.
Sentence me. Get it over with.
Al, stop it. Your Honor, if I may. Al, there are just the five of us here. Now, Clint's going to ask you just a couple of questions.
No.
Try to answer them. You aren't going to have to say much.
Go ahead, Mr. Wallace.
Well, Al, before you came to Arizona, did you and Mrs. Larson happen to run a boarding house in Sacramento?
Yeah.
Did a young couple with a small baby take a room just before a shooting fray known as the Gaylord Hotel Massacre?
I didn't know who they were.
Were you called to identify a woman who was killed as she helped her husband gun down a whole room full of celebrating miners?
It was her.
Did you ever see the man again?
Not till he come to St. David 4 days ago and wanted Barbara. We couldn't tell anybody they left the baby. A baby isn't born bad, no matter what its parents are. But if they're treated bad, if they're poked fun at and shamed, they can turn bad. But we couldn't let that happen to Barbie. We couldn't ever let her know.
Your Honor, Al Larson and his wife and that abandoned baby came to Arizona nearly 12 years ago. Mrs. Larson died the year after. I don't know how you feel about what's born in a child and what's put there by the way it's raised. But Barbara Larson's a young lady I'd want for a daughter. And Al Larson's a friend to everyone who knows him. I think Clint and Wichita will bear me out.
That's what I think, Your Honor.
So do I. It's all the case we got.
You've presented a good case. We've accomplished more, I think, than if we'd spent several days hearing lawyers wrangling to impress a jury. The court finds this homicide justifiable, committed in the lawful protection of the defendant's child. Mr. Larson, we're hereby released from custody.
Your Honor, I...
You come outside with me, Al.
Yeah, Al. Might be somebody who wants to see you.
Father! Oh, Father!
Barbie!
Oh.
Barbie, honey.
Oh, Father, is everything all right?
Yeah, Barbie. Everything's all right now.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington, was written by Fran Van Hartisveld and directed by William N. Robeson. Editorial supervision by Tom Hanley. Supporting Mr. Buffington were Norma Jean Nilsen, Junius Matthews, Charles Seal, Carl Swenson, and Vic Perrin, with music composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Next week at this time, we return with...
Slaughter's the name. Luke Slaughter. When we meet up again, you can call me that. Luke Slaughter.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
And that is Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. I bet you if you were around back then in the 1800s, Lisa, you might have dated this guy, Luke Slaughter, because he was a tough guy, and he was, you know, a cool guy. And you like those tough, cool guys.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What makes you
think? I think so. I think you would have worked at the saloon, because that's where the women worked over there. She would have worked at the saloon, and then you would have been an actress up on stage. And that's what you would have done back in the good old days.
I'm not sure.
Did you ever think about being alive in those days in the 1800s where there were cowgirls and cowboys? That would have been cool.
Not
back
sure.
They didn't bathe. They didn't brush their teeth much.
I found that very attractive.
Right in.
Yeah,
you would have fit right in back then.
That sounds great.
You know, and
it's kind of like sitting next to you at the radio station.
It is. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after midnight here. Happy Monday morning to everybody. Happy Monday morning, Lisa.
Oh, don't sing.
Oh, no, I won't.
Okay.
Don't worry.
I thought you were going to break out
there. I only sing in the shower.
Oh, good.
And I sound great.
I bet you do.
I just can't sing.
I don't really
at any
know,
other time.
Actually.
I mean, for I'm a frustrated singer. I really want to be
frustrated. What?
Frustrated singer.
Frosted flake singer.
Yeah, frosted
flake.
I'm a frosted flake.
Singer.
I'm a flake. All right.
He's one letter off, Roger. It's pretty
just
typical
missed it
for him.
By that
much. I've always wanted to be a singer. I'm just not good at it. So
we're not arguing with you.
Can't somebody say I am?
He like pauses you am. And nobody says anything.
I amsk what I amsk. All right. So enough of that. Let's talk about I was a communist for the FBI, because that's what we have for this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. Good half hour drama. Starring Dana Andrews, and that'll be coming your way in just a minute. But right now, it's time to play Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
Well, last hour we did Before Sunrise from 1995, and this hour we are doing Before Sunset, the sequel, 2004.
Hmm.
So you probably haven't seen that one either.
No. So I got the first one right.
Well, you,
I went
just,
with the
you
listener.
Just went with Lisa.
I went with Lisa because she knew what she was talking about.
Right.
Roger, of course, got it wrong.
Well, somebody has to.
So let's... what do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical, at Royal George Theater here in
Chicago.
All
right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Want to win some tickets? Give us a call right now. And what caller, Lisa?
We want caller 6.
Caller 6. Call now, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's
Pride. This is costing me a fortune with this Rogers voice on
Rogers
here.
Very expensive.
Got a quarter of a pop.
Well, he deserves
royalty
it.
Royalty charges me for this.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah, hi. Bill's in the mail.
The bill or the check?
No, check will never be.
We've got Glenn on the phone. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, how are you doing, Lisa?
Great. Glad
hey,
you made
Glenn.
It through. Caller 6, and we're going to play a little Crack the Quote. You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Did you ever see this movie, Glenn?
No, I didn't.
Me neither.
All right, Roger, did you see it?
No.
This should be fun. All right, here we go. Number 1. Can you believe it was 9 years ago that we were walking around Vienna? Number 2. Can you believe it was 10 years ago we were walking around London? Number 3. Can you believe it was 11 years ago we were walking around Paris? Well, you'd know if you saw the movie, because you'd know if they were in Vienna, London, or Paris. Exactly. But if you saw the movie, you'd know this.
What do you think, Glenn?
So, yeah, give it a try.
I don't know. I'm going to go with number 3. Either.
Number 3 is Paris.
Yeah.
Roger?
What was the title again?
Before Sunset. That should help you out.
Yeah, no, it didn't. give me the London one.
Okay, we've got a Paris and a London.
I'll take London.
All right, so here's my question. Of those three locales, which one has a sunset?
That's going to be up to you to decide. What do you think?
I'm going to just go with number... What did Roger say?
Look, number 1 is Vienna, number 2 is London, and number 3 is Paris.
I like Paris.
All right, we've got two Parises and a London. Let's hear it.
Can you believe it was 9 years ago that we were walking around Vienna?
So you guys were so close. It was Vienna.
They have good hot dogs there.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Vienna. Well, that's great.
Someone turn his mic off.
They became famous because of that.
That's right.
Vienna became famous because of the hot dogs. Yeah, they did.
And you have to be careful what you put on the hot dogs.
Pretty
no ketchup
sure
in Vienna.
No?
No. So anyhow, Glenn, you know what? It doesn't matter. You are the big winner here. You've won two tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical. It opens September 13th at the Royal George Theater here
in
Chicago.
You'll have to watch your waste if you eat too many hot dogs.
Is that right? Do you like hot dogs, Glenn?
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it. Listen to the show every week.
Oh, thank you so much. Check it out. The show, you can learn more information at wastewatchersthemusical.com. You can call the Royal George box office at 312-988-9000. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay, no problem.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Glenn. All right, it's time now for I Was a Communist for the FBI. This was a spy series, Lisa, and it starred Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic. Savetic infiltrated the Communist Party in the United States and reported every move back to the FBI for 9 years. This was true. This guy, Matt Savetic, really did this. He worked for us and infiltrated the Communist Party that was kind of in the United States, and they were doing bad stuff, and so we had our spies trying to report back to us on it. And there was a movie about it, there was a novel, a book, and so in 1952, they brought a radio series to the airwaves, and this was really a tension-filled series because at any time, Savetic could be found out by the Communist Party. So these were really cool, cool episodes. This one's from February 4th, 1953. It's called The Sleeper. Here is Dana Andrews in part one of I Was a Communist for the FBI.
I was a communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews and an exciting tale of danger and espionage, I Was a Communist for the FBI. From the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Savetic come many of the incidents in this unusual story. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI.
For 9 years, I disowned myself. I tried to forget what I'd been and what I stood for. I wasn't my own man, but two men, facing in opposite directions, but joined by arteries and nerves. I was a living contradiction for two masters, against two masters. Traitor, patriot, communist, FBI. That angel sat on one shoulder and Satan on the other for 9 long fantastic years when I was a communist for the FBI.
Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, Undercover Man. This story from the confidential file is marked The Sleeper.
First, I think it's a conventional trick to put me on edge and at a disadvantage for whatever's going to happen. Then I realize that Comrade Revson is really worried, deeply puzzled. He stands looking out the window, holding that official-looking paper in his hand. He's worried about it, but I see he's also memorizing it. Then he turns to me and discovers me slowly, as though I hadn't been there when the letter was handed to him by a drop messenger.
Svetty.
Comrade Revson?
I have an assignment for you. From the highest source.
The Kremlin in person?
Svetty, you know Shepard Riker, of course.
That loud communist baiter?
Shepard Riker is an extremely dangerous man. His work in Washington is strategic, and his personal campaign against the party is embarrassing.
It's time we did something about him, too.
We are about to do something now. Mrs. Riker lives in this city, a charming woman, reportedly.
What's she got to do with it?
She is one of us.
Mrs. Shepard Riker a communist?
I said so.
Well, she can't be. It just isn't in the books.
But it is. She joined the party 10 years ago. Most attractive, very young. Too attractive for the ordinary work of the party. We assigned her to return to her usual life, to forget she was a member of the party, until we should call upon her for special duty. These orders are it.
We're calling her back to active service?
You will make an appointment with Mrs. Riker.
Serve the greetings on her, eh?
And acquaint her with her assignment. She is to use her influence with her husband to make him cease entirely his attacks on the Communist Party.
Suppose she'd rather forget she was a communist entirely.
remind her.
But suppose she says no to proposition Shepherd Racker.
We will entertain no alternatives.
And that's all I have to do. Get Mrs. Racker to make her husband lay off the party.
Correct.
Any suggestions?
Only one. Succeed.
I've been a communist for the FBI for quite a while, but this is a new one on me, and I'm always uneasy about these or else assignments of Revson's. I phone my FBI contact, and we arrange to meet on a park bench near the lagoon. I tell him about my new assignment. For a minute, he doesn't say anything. I feel a chill colder than the bluish November twilight. Then I see him getting ready to talk.
Matt, you may be in for a bad time with Mrs. Riker.
Well, that's how I figure it, but Revson is blithe about it.
Mrs. Shepherd Riker represents one of the less known devices of the party. She's what the red tacticians call a sleeper. Sleepers in the party are supposed to make themselves scarce with the party, go into normal life, act as if they'd never joined the party.
Get lost.
In short.
But they're still in the party.
Oh, indeed they are. And subject to call when the party has just the right assignment for them. Charmian Riker's number happens to be up. You have a tough assignment, Matt. Tough moral problem involved.
How?
Well, look. If you succeed, you'll have brought Charmian Riker back into active party duty. And you'll have knocked a strong anti-communist out of action for the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't envy you. There might be some unpleasant realities for you both to face. When the sleeper wakes.
Hello?
Is this Mrs. Shepherd Riker?
This is Mrs. Riker.
May I speak to Mr. Riker, please? This is Mr. Matthews.
I'm sorry, Mr. Riker's in Washington. I can tell you where he may be reached if it's urgent.
It's very urgent, but I'd like to discuss it with you first.
Why? What is it?
I can't talk over the phone.
Well, I don't... What did you say your name was?
I said it was Matthews.
Does that mean it isn't Matthews, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Sounds rather mysterious and conspiratorial, and I don't have much taste for conspiracy, Mr. Matthews.
Then your tastes have changed in the past 10 years.
Just... What do you mean by that?
I mean you ought to make a sincere effort to hear what I've got to say. I suggest dinner at any place you suggest.
Could you make it earlier than dinner?
Better yet.
5 o'clock. At my apartment?
Just as you say.
Make it 4:30, would you? It gets so dark so early these days.
I understand, Mrs. Riker. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Even over the telephone, something unusual comes through. A peculiar plaintive quality, dignified by an inflection that seems outdated. A lady, quote-unquote, straight out of one of the better Lavender novels of 50 years ago. The voice of a highly sensitive woman, of a Puritan. But beneath the Puritanism, something that might be warmly demonstrative. I take the self-serve elevator to the 9th floor, press the doorbell in the plushy corridor...
Mr. Matthews?
Am I too early?
No. Or rather, yes, but that's good. Come in. Do sit down, Mr. Matthews.
Thank you.
May I get you some refreshment?
If you don't mind, Mrs. Riker, I came early to leave early. I'd like to come to the point right away.
Yes.
My business is only indirectly with your husband.
What is it, please?
Well, your husband is a powerful man in Washington, and still going up. He's pretty outspoken in his criticism of the Communist Party.
He feels very strongly about it.
We want him to cut it out.
Let me understand you.
We want your husband to stop attacking the party.
Who precisely wants him to stop?
We do. You and I.
Who are you?
Comrade Matthew Savedic. Comrade Charmian.
Go back to your superiors. Tell them that 10 years ago I was an impressionable girl. I joined the party blindly. Tell them I'm 10 years older now, without any girlish illusions about the revolution and the dictatorship of the proletariat. Tell them that I'm married and that I love my husband. I will not change him from his attacks on the communists in America.
I can't tell them that.
It's what I'm telling you. Do as you please with it.
You love your husband. Just how do you think it will affect his anti-communism and his career if it becomes public that you are a communist?
I'm not.
You joined the party 10 years ago, and we can prove it.
I left it 8 years ago. I may be on the party rolls, all right. But all my acts and all my instincts are against them now.
Your husband might not make such a fine distinction. He hasn't up till now.
You're saying that if I don't betray him, you'll force him to expose me?
Very much afraid so, Carmen.
Blackmail.
I'm afraid so. Now, what shall I tell my superiors?
Tell them... Say...
Mrs. Riker. Please, Mrs. Riker.
Tell them... Ask them to let me think about it. Can you?
Well, I don't have to ask them. Think about it. I'll call you. I see Charmian Riker twice in the next few days. No decision. But I don't push. First, you can't push people like her without breaking something. And second, I'm a little fascinated by Charmian. The more I like her, the less I like my job. And pretty soon, I hate my job. Revson is getting impatient, afraid that Moscow will start pushing him for a decision from Charmian. I have dinner with her again in an off-the-trail place. Her idea again. I hate it. The job sickens and shames me and tortures a woman I like and respect. I know you're getting pretty tired of me by now.
Anybody else wouldn't have been as kind, I'm sure.
Kind? You're the tolerant one.
I don't have a choice, do I?
I suppose not. But I'd like to remain kind, but my chief is pressing for a decision from you.
I can't.
Sooner or later, it'll be the same. You can't win. Call it crocodile tears. Say we'll sacrifice anybody for our ends. I guess we will. But I'm sorry, Mrs. Riker.
Don't call me that in public. Somebody should recognize the name and notice us together.
You dine openly with other men, and to your husband's knowledge. No harm done, I'm sure.
Openly, yes. This isn't open. It's so clandestine, so secret. I feel I'm dishonoring Shep already.
I can't call you Comrade Charmian in public.
No.
Just Charmian?
I suppose so.
Charmian. Nice name.
Matt, look over there, carefully.
The corner?
Careful. It's that man watching us. Do you know him?
No. No, I don't know him.
He's coming over to us.
Yeah.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Excuse me. My name is Revson.
Well?
You are Matthew Svetik?
I am.
It is important I speak to you privately.
Oh, will you excuse me, Charmian?
Of course.
For the remainder of the evening, Mr. Svetik.
Man, that's some dramatic music right there, Lisa.
Oh, that's perfect for you, Carl.
It's a very intense show here.
You're pretty intense, Carl.
This is I Was a Communist for the FBI. It's called The Sleeper, starring Dana Andrews. The original broadcast date was February 4th, 1953. We'll have the second portion of that, the concluding half, after the news. It's time for the news, too. It's 12:30, right on the money. Gosh. We're good.
We're good at this.
Right on the money. Time for news. Here's Roger Badish.
You already sent out temporary layoff notices. More than 24 employees. Notices went out to those employees who belong to the Ask Me Union and 16 members of the Teamsters Union. Those members decided they wouldn't take the furlough days the city wanted them to in order to help balance the budget. Pope Francis said he won't say a word about an 11-page text by the Vatican's retired ambassador to the United States that claims the pontiff knew in 2013 about sexual misconduct allegations against the former Archbishop of Washington. Indiana will use more than $7.5 million in federal funding to enhance election security, but won't upgrade its voting machines. To upgrade those machines, it would cost $35 million. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
You know, Lisa, we've had a lot of people signing up for the Classic Radio Club. And one of the questions I saw on the text in line was, these shows, what are the quality of the shows? And are they shows we play on the air? And that's a great question. You know, when we play these radio episodes on the air, generally we have to remove some of the commercials. And we do sometimes have to edit a song out or two because they do run kind of long. And we have other things we have to do, news at the top of the hour, or the bottom of the hour. We have commercials to get in. We like to chat with you a little bit and give you history about the show and things. And we play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. So many of these shows are not as originally broadcast. We do have to slightly edit, take a commercial out here or there. All of the shows that we will send you, if you're part of the Classic Radio Club, are complete and is originally broadcast back when they aired originally in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Now, sometimes those shows came through Armed Forces Radio, and then the original commercials were taken out. No matter where we get the master transcription disc, whether it's an Armed Forces Radio rebroadcast, which would have the commercials taken out, or if they're the original recordings with all the cigarette commercials or whatever is in there, we leave it all in. We do not edit any of the shows you'll get in the Classic Radio Club. And all of our shows are direct from the master recordings because we license these shows from the owners and the estates. And we do pay royalties to sell and to broadcast these shows. And so when you join the club, that's all included. It's all, you'll get the best of the best quality, all completely unedited. And you're going to hear shows that have not been aired on our program. You're going to hear, you're going to get shows that have never been aired since they originally aired back in the 1930s, because we have so many shows. We have over 100,000 shows. So I will handpick 10 of the greatest shows every single month for you and put them on 5 CDs and send them to you in a collector case. I'll also write liner notes, copious liner notes, about each and every show and the series. And you can join this club for only $4.99 the very first month. You will get 5 CDs, 10 shows. And then after that, it increases to $14.99, but it'll stay $14.99 for as long as you're in the club, and you will never get a duplicate show. Now, Lisa joined, and she got her first set. What do you think of it, Lisa?
Well, I just shared it with my dad, so he can appreciate it as well. So that's what you can do as well when you get CDs. They're very easy to share.
Yeah, and these are not burned CDs. These are actually replicated CDs, just like you would buy in a store. So they are very high quality, not only the CDs themselves, but the sound quality of the shows on there. And you get the liner notes and all of that. So do check out the Classic Radio Club. Just go to ClassicRadioClub.com. That is the best way to check it out, ClassicRadioClub.com. But if you go to our website, WGN Radio Theater, there will be a pop-up. You can click the pop-up and take you right to the website, ClassicRadioClub.com. All right, one of the shows that we'll probably put on the Classic Radio Club is I Was a Communist for the FBI. Maybe not this particular show we're listening to. It's called The Sleeper. Here's the conclusion now to I Was a Communist for the FBI.
Now back to Dana Andrews, starring as Matt Sivetic in I Was a Communist for the FBI and the second act of our story.
I put Charmian into a cab, feeling like a nerveless adolescent being whipped home by a stern parent. Worse, I sensed the panic in Charmian, being discovered and exposed. Revson walked silently beside me, steering me into the park, swept empty by the raw November night.
Now then, Svetig,
Tell me about this excessively handsome woman.
You know all I've reported.
Nothing new tonight?
No.
Why not?
You don't use bulldozing tactics on people as sensitive as Charmian.
Charmian. How friendly.
Now listen, Repson.
Comrade Svetik. Do not force me to speculate which side you are really on. Keep us secure and safe in the knowledge that you are a trustworthy party member.
I am prepared to stand on my record, Comrade Revson.
Your record is good, but it does not include such majestic beauties as Charmian.
Nevertheless...
Then give me results.
I'm making progress.
Results, Svetik, not reports of progress. I want the woman's decision by Wednesday.
One way or the other?
Either way. If she demurs, we blackmail her. We compel her anti-communist husband to explain his communist wife. With such cards, it is impossible to lose, Svetik. See that you do not. Good night.
Hello?
Mr. Svetik? Is Mr. Svetik there yet?
Well, Charmian.
Oh, I've been trying all day to reach you. They keep on saying it's a drugstore.
Well, I use the pay station here for one of my offices, yes.
I've got to see you.
Tonight, make it?
Now. Can you come to the apartment?
I thought you preferred not seeing me there.
Please.
Coming right over.
Did anybody see you come in, Matt?
I waited for the doorman to go off to whistle up a taxi. It's raining again.
Not that it matters anymore. Secrecy.
Why?
My husband came home unexpectedly this afternoon. I knew something was wrong the moment he came in.
I thought he wasn't due back from Washington for another week.
No. But you and I have been seen together. We're being watched. Shep showed me a letter, unsigned.
Naturally.
He repeated telephone calls he's been getting about us.
Also anonymous, of course.
It could be anybody. He's saying such dreadful things.
And he believes them?
We had a horrible scene. I knew it would happen. I knew it.
Did you tell him anything about us?
Nothing. That's what's so impossible about it. I can't tell him anything. Shall I tell him you and I are working to betray him?
I'm sorry, Charmian, but there's nothing I can do.
You're sorry?
There's nothing to be done.
You can do something. You've got to do something. You've got to talk to him.
It's useless.
We'll see. Now... go to that phone.
You can force me to the telephone with that gun, Charmian, but you can't make the right words come when there aren't any.
Call Shep. Dial Canby 2211. Tell him to meet you here.
I'll tell him I'm one of his hated Reds, and that I've been talking to you to get you to make him stop Red baiting. That sound good?
Yes. When he hears that a week of persuasion and threats haven't moved me, he'll have to believe in me.
And then I explained that you were the party's logical instrument because you're his wife and a communist, vulnerable to threats. Shall I call?
No.
You see? Want me to take care of that gun?
No. Don't worry.
But I do worry. And not for myself.
My suicide wouldn't help Shep either. There's no way out.
Does that mean you're ready to cooperate?
You were to see me tonight. Let me think about it until then.
Deadline at 8?
8 o'clock. I'll give you my answer.
At 7:45, I'm walking toward Charmian's apartment. A car pulls to the curb and signals me discreetly. The FBI. I get into the car and we bolt away from there and then settle down to a good conversational speed. And I get a jolt that sets my brain whirling.
Matt, I've checked through all the available facts about the people concerned in this case.
Well, have fun. I'm not.
This is something that might shake you.
I'm used to it.
Shepard Ryker, our important Washington figure and vigorous, hard-hitting anti-communist, is a communist.
Hmm? Oh, no.
Watch it, will you? I'm driving.
Shepard Ryker, a Red?
A very active and loyal one. Riker's party efforts are reaching an advanced stage where his wife will have to know his true color and help in his communist activities. Now do you get it?
Now, yeah. The party wants to see how loyal Charmian is to them.
You've got it.
They figure if she'd betray her husband, who she thinks is an anti-communist, she'd be a safe bet for full party responsibility.
It's another test, Matt, a big important one.
She can't win. If she disobeys her present orders, she'll be tagged unreliable. Riker will drop her cold.
Or she'll play along with the party and find out her idol is a communist.
She can't win.
That's rough. Well, there's your target for tonight, Matt.
Charmian.
Hmm?
It's an odd name till you get used to it. Then you like it.
Good luck, Matt.
Hello?
Oh,
if a man answers, come in anyhow.
Yeah.
Darling, you have a caller. Dear? I don't believe I've met the gentleman, darling.
Mr. Svetty, my husband.
I won't say how do you do, since by all appearances and intelligences, you've been doing very well.
Stop it, Chef. You've said enough. Matt will tell you that I haven't been deceiving you.
Matt will. Now, who is Matt? This is Mr. Svetty, isn't it?
A man can lose a lot of good wives that way, Riker.
What way, Svetty? We may be thinking of different ways.
Look, Riker, give up. You're making a second-class heel out of yourself in front of a wife who's up to her ears in love with you. Heaven knows why. Why don't you let bad enough alone before you cut yourself down to a first-class
heel? Watch it, mister. I've got a 20-pound edge on you.
Watch it yourself, mister. You may have 20 pounds on me, but a lot of that poundage is blood pressure. You're getting red in the face, son. And it's bad when it shows on you, especially in Washington, D.C. The instant I say it, I know that my anger and my feeling for Charmian and my subconscious has played a nasty trick on me. I'm not supposed to know Riker's a red, but I've said something like it, even as a sort of angry gag.
How did you know, Svetty?
I'm in an awful spot. How did I know Shep is a red? The FBI. I can't match that dishy stare of his. My eyes glance over toward Charmian.
Maybe I understand. Charmian? How did you know?
I don't know what you mean, Shep.
Don't lie to me.
Shep, be careful what you
say. Answer me!
Oh!
Oh, you stupid rotten...
No, Matt! This is between Shep and me.
And you tell me. How did you know I was in the party?
I'm in the party, too, darling.
I've always known that, you fool.
He wouldn't have married you otherwise.
How did you know I've been a communist? Why did you tell him? Answer me! What kind of a party member is it who gives away top party secrets to casuals like this Svetik here?
She didn't tell me anything. I knew. Okay?
You knew. Don't tell me my dear wife has been carrying on behind my back with the FBI.
He's a communist, too.
You?
Savitic's the name, comrade.
I thought only the top echelons in Moscow knew I'm a communist.
Think again. And in particular, think twice before you slug a woman, comrade. It gives the party a black eye. And it gives your wife a bleeding mouth. Here, take my handkerchief, Mrs. White.
Get out, Svetik.
Charmian?
You'd better go.
This is between my wife and me. We'll talk further at headquarters, comrade.
Okay.
Now get out.
I have to leave if they both tell me to, but I'm in serious trouble. I had to admit to Riker that I'm a communist to get Charmian off the hook. But when he checks at headquarters and finds out that even Big Shot Revson didn't know he was a comrade, he'll wonder how I knew. And I'm in hot water, but hot. I get into the self-serve elevator. I hear a door slam far away. I sink another story before I realize it was a shot. I press the up button for 9, and then the elevator goes crazy with people on all floors trying to commandeer it. I finally have to settle for the 6th floor and run up the steps to 9. I edged through the crowd at the open door of 902 Riker. Shep is on the floor, and he's dead. Charmian is standing quietly talking to an officer who must have come up the freight elevator. Her mouth is bleeding again, and she has new bruises, and her magnificent hair is tumbled and her gown torn. She sees me pushing forward and stops me with those beautiful, eloquent eyes. Shakes her head slightly for me to keep out of it. She's right. There's nothing I can do. On the street, I slowly realize I'm in the clear. Shepard Riker will never find out from headquarters that nobody, let alone Savedic, knew Riker was a top communist. Shep pushed his luck and Charmian's love too far. Charmian? Call it a break for her. An obvious case of self-defense. A couple of years, and she ought to be a free woman. Free of the party, too. Out of bondage forever. Charmian Riker, communist sleeper, will wake up one day free. Me? Maybe I'll see her then. Maybe we'll all be free then. Right now, it's no dice. I'm a communist for the FBI. I walk alone. Dana Andrews stepping out of the character of Matt Savedic to tell you that the story you've just heard is far from fiction. Names of characters have been changed and certain incidents disguised to protect innocent people. But what you've just heard is much of the real truth and all of the spirit of what happened. Next week, another adventure of Matt Savedic who worked undercover for the FBI. You won't forgive yourself when others tell you what you've missed, so don't miss it. Thanks.
That is, I was a communist for the... Well, I wasn't. But I was a communist for the FBI with The Sleeper, starring Dana Andrews, February 4th, 1953. Those were interesting radio episodes. We were just talking about it, Alice and Bob, Lisa's parents here. We were talking about how... and Alice brought this up, and you're so right, Alice, that this was a time when there was a lot of fear in the United States about the Communist Party infiltrating America. And there was all the McCarthyism. And I know Nixon was big in that before he became president. He sort of worked with Senator McCarthy. And they were going to try to rid the communists from America. And they really came down hard on people in Hollywood. If you were sympathetic to the Communist Party at all, you never worked again. And they would put you in the red, you know, they would have a whole black book that you couldn't work. That's it. You couldn't work. Anyway, a great episode with Dana Andrews. Stick around. More of our WGN Radio Theater after these words.